Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the Unknown Zone. This is the talk show about the unusual. I'm your host, Dave Turco, with co-host Judy Sellens. Tonight, folks, we're going to be talking about asteroids, specifically the 10 largest earthly hits and their dangers. But did you know that in 2013, asteroid known as 2012 DA14 narrowly missed the Earth? It was the closest asteroid flyby on record. And just today, we had another near miss. But there have been times in the past where we didn't have a near miss. It actually hit the Earth. And it, you know, depending on how big these things are, it could absolutely change life as we know it on Earth completely. It could wipe out civilizations. It certainly would change the way everybody operates. Could be really, really big. But anyway, it's interesting stuff. It also gets into, you know, even the basic definition of an asteroid. I find it interesting, Judy, that you would think there would be a definitive description as to, okay, a boy versus a girl, a tree, what is a tree, what is a cat, what is the air, what's a cloud, you know what I mean? And yet, it's almost like, you know, it's almost described in terms of things that it isn't. Like, for instance, if it can't be doesn't fit the description of a comet, it's probably an asteroid. Asteroids are small, airless. They don't have an atmosphere. Rocky, so they're mostly rock, but not necessarily. Worlds revolving around the sun that are too small to be called planets or smaller than a planetoid, which is a small planet. Also, they're almost always irregularly shaped, but not necessarily. And the biggest one is over 500 miles across. That's huge. Yeah. The smallest one ever studied was only 6 feet across.
Yep.
It's absolutely...
And you know, if they're around 10 feet, okay, say they're at a 10-foot diameter... And they're coming in like the one that was coming in Russia in 2013, coming in at that speed, and although that was breaking up, when it was speed, that's equal to an atomic bomb.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
Equal to one atomic bomb if they're 10 feet across and coming in like that. And so, I mean, we can all say, oh, well, can't worry about them. But, you know... If they hit, I mean, that Theia that hit, that was a massive one. And everybody thinks, though, the largest one was the one that, you know, destroyed all the dinosaurs and all that. Well, they haven't even really proven that that's what killed off all the dinosaurs. But anyway, they believe that there was one that big because there was a crater. But, I mean, nobody was really around to be able to tell you if that crater did what it, you know, what they say it did. But, yeah, the largest asteroid ever to hit the Earth was one called Theia, T-H-E-I-A. And they say it was a Mars-sized impact. That's how big this thing was, supposedly. And... was responsible for actually propelling matter into orbit, and that eventually became Earth's moon.
Supposedly.
And that was over 4 billion years ago during the early days of our solar system. So it was very, very long, you know, a really, really long time ago.
Yeah, but my question is, as it says here, this Theia... formed in the Lagrange point, which is a gravitationally stable region in the Earth's orbit. Okay, so just imagine the Earth goes around the sun, right? So just picture the imaginary path that it takes. Pretty much opposite where we are is called the Lagrange point, and that's where somehow a bunch of rocks got together and formed. I mean, how did this – I mean, the size of Mars, Mars isn't that much smaller than we are, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's huge. It's huge, 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 huge. And it, we end up eventually hitting each other. And, you know, it was the early days, so it wasn't like, you know, it was kind of molten and everything, both of us. And supposedly the rest of it splatted up and turned into the moon, which I guess is possible. I just, you know, the more I do these things, the more I have to just go with the old creation theory.
Right.
It doesn't make sense to me how that could be possible. Now, I don't know if there's a way to replicate that in a laboratory. How could you replicate space and whatever, the conditions and some molten stuff, throw it around and see if the planets really fall where they fall and you know,
because something really, really solid or something that's molten is going to, I mean, they're going to strike differently. They're going to be affected differently, and they're going to break apart differently. You know, you have something molten. I mean, that's an altogether, that's liquid rock.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got this thing floating around out there, and then all of a sudden it started to wobble, and it started to head towards the Earth, and that's what they call a giant impact theory. That's their scenario for all of this.
Just a theory.
Yeah, well, you know, they're all a theory because nobody was around to see it happen.
Correct.
All you can do is estimate, you know, what they have done since then, what asteroids have done since then, and then look at them as to what it could have been back when the Earth was forming.
Well, I would like for them to be able to point out, you know, we've got all these high-powered telescopes looking deep into space. And supposedly at times, you know, this is forming, that's forming, this star's going into a supernova and blah, 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 blah. Okay, is there any evidence of anywhere that we've seen that that's how something like a moon or a planet can form? I just think of it as like, okay, say there was the sun in the early days and it, you know, I understand in the sort of creation, blobs of it fly out and one of it's Earth, another one's the moon. But even the asteroid belt, that's a weird theory. You know, that belt of asteroids. They can be, by the way, folks, ranging in huge size, you know, like over 500 miles across to tiny, like the size of me, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Make up the asteroid belt, and get this, they don't even know how many asteroids are in this belt, but it could be as much as over a trillion of these asteroids. And one of the things that I think is interesting, I never thought about the derivation of the word asteroid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you did, but anyway, oid, it would be a suffix, which just means like little. That's why like planet is a planet, a planetoid's a little planet.
That's an like Italian, eni means the small of.
Yeah, there you go. And so the thing that's interesting is, aster, of course, you think of, okay, it's like an English name, or it's a flower, which is, it means star or star-like. And that's what an asteroid is, like a small star-like thing. But it's not really star-like, it's more like planet-like. So I think it's kind of funny that they call it asteroid. Because aster means star. So I just think it's funny that they named it asteroid because it really doesn't have anything to do with a star.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's not star-like.
When they started calling them that as to, oh, that's an asteroid, you know, I don't know when that word first started to be used.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that would tell us something more. Because if it was in real ancient times, they thought everything in the sky would have been a star. So they had no idea of, in the very beginning. I mean, they wouldn't probably have known the difference between planets and stars. They just figured they were all stars, and maybe that's why they named it a small star or whatever.
Right. Yeah, same with most people today. They wouldn't know the difference.
Hmm. Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't know, you know, what's in an asteroid. And that's really interesting because, I mean, we have, as a planetary people, have actually thought about putting, you know, bases on some of these asteroids, the bigger ones.
Mm-hmm.
And if you couldn't put up some sort of a weapon that would push away an, you know, an asteroid that was headed towards Earth before it could do damage. But, you know, without having a lot of ways to get up there fast or to send something up fast, you know, that tends to be an issue. And you know, and then we get into the chemical compositions of what's going on, and then they know that the moon basically has the same components in its chemical makeup that the Earth has. That's why they think that it came off the Earth, or, you know, this other planet smashed into it, or an asteroid smashed the Earth, and then, you know, this chunk flew off of the Earth, and then that created, you know, it formed itself up there and cooled and whatever.
Well, one of the things, too, of course, is how much do we truly know about the moon anyway? I mean, we've done shows about that.
Yeah.
You know, it rings like a bell. I don't know. To me, this is the thing. Just because it has certain characteristics similar to the Earth, the thing is the Earth came out of the sun, supposedly.
Mm.
So why wouldn't everything basically in our solar system have a similar, you know, it's like, you know, if we came out of the sun and Mars came out of the sun and Mercury came out of the sun, of course,
but we have a lot of planets out there that certainly aren't. Some of them are just big gas balls. And so they're not, they wouldn't be made up probably like the Earth at all. They would be different.
Right. Only because they're still gaseous, but any part of them that's solid, all I'm saying is we came out of the same chemical soup in the beginning.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
All I'm getting at is why would there, people have this notion, I'm not saying you, you know, like Earth is different and like aliens would look so weird or different. We all came out of whatever, whether you call it the Big Bang, creation, why would there be, you know, the elements are the same around the universe. And sure, the actual makeup, as far as, you know, some planets are going to have more, let's say, carbon than another, or another one might have more nitrogen or zinc or copper, whatever it is. And it does account for differences, but nevertheless, they'll all be, you know, pretty much, you know, you only have so many elements. And the other thing is, it would be interesting to find out how different or similar the asteroids from the asteroid belt are, which supposedly have nothing to do with the Earth.
Mm.
It's a really fascinating thing. I just think that they like to try to give a clear theory as to how we are, how Earth came about, how the sun came about, how the entire solar system, galaxy, et cetera, came about. I just don't think we can know. We barely know what's going on this planet. And also, just because you have some rocks from the moon, supposedly, look at how much of the Earth, planet Earth, goes on here that we don't even know about. Let alone what, you know, all of the, how much of. Let's just pretend we did go to the moon more than once, and we're able to bring some rocks back. Well, out of the whole moon, how much did we actually test? 0.00001%? You know, it's a tiny fragment is all I'm getting at.
Mm.
Anyway, yeah, it's an interesting theory about how, look, we know that the moon is here, the Earth is here. Somehow we all got here. it's just all bizarre. And I also never knew that, by definition, asteroids are, you know, planetary like bodies that orbit the sun.
Uh-huh.
So I guess if you have a rock that's winging its way through whatever the universe, but it's not orbiting the sun, it wouldn't be classified as an asteroid. It would probably be called a comet.
Oh, if it's just winging its way along, I would imagine.
Yeah, because these other ones have to. One of the characteristics of an asteroid is it has an orbit. It's just weird. The whole thing is weird because, just like what we often talk about, Judy, is how the Bible is often, actually always proven to be right, even when we think it's just exaggeration, like a parable or a fable or, you know, some sort of story, but it's not really true. And then if you do enough research, you find out it is true. It's this whole thing about the creation. Why are there meteors, meteorites, asteroids, comets, planets, planetoids, all these things? You know, it's just kind of weird to me that all these things are out there. And we constantly are renaming them. In fact, that Thea, I had originally read that, it was an asteroid the size of Mars. But actually, you know, another website I went to, it was actually considered, when it was still in existence, a planet, just because of the sheer size of it. Yeah, no. Anyway, whatever. It's just really, really weird stuff. Anyway, so that was the biggest one ever.
That was the largest.
And one of the things is, one of the pieces of evidence that, of course, it gives is a big old crater. And when you look at the surface of the moon, surface of other planets, surface of other, you know, moon's planet orbiting the other planets, most of them are mixed with all these have all these craters, which would largely be from asteroid strikes. Meant to say also that one of the characteristics of an asteroid that differentiates itself from a small planet is it's usually irregularly shaped. They're these really weird deformed things. Anyway, the Vredefort crater shows, let's see, that was an asteroid impact estimated to be 2 billion years ago, and it was in South Africa. And this crater has an estimated radius of 118 miles. So that would be like from here, like southern New England, we're in Rhode Island. You could go all the way past New York City.
That's a big crater.
Yeah, and you'd still be the same crater.
It's gigantic.
Yeah, it's the world's largest known impact structure. And it was declared a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 2005, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. Because if anything was alive at that point on the entire planet, it's not going to be alive after that sort of thing.
Oh, no, because, I mean, just the dust and the dirt and everything else that would have gone up into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, from something that huge would have blacked out everything for quite a while.
Oh, absolutely.
And killed anything, I mean, just the force of it. I mean, you're thinking of, remember, one that's 10 feet around causing something that's equal to an atomic bomb.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you get something this big. We haven't even made bombs. You know,
no.
As big as something like this. So you're talking about something that could wipe out different states.
Yeah, it must have been. Yeah, and that means those states would simply be vanished. Like if this thing hits where we are, Connecticut would be gone. Rhode Island would be gone. Part of New York would be gone instantaneously. You know, we'd be squished down I don't know how far. And but it would impact the entire planet. Not that first day, but eventually.
Right.
Absolutely amazing, the size of that. 118 miles across, coming, winging its way through the galaxy, well, the solar system anyway, and then whacking into the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely amazing. Then there's
they had one, the Sudbury one. That's Sudbury Basin. That was 1.8 billion years ago.
How can I even... I guess you just kind of guess as to how big something has to be if it's a billion years or more ago. I mean, there's nobody that was around that wrote anything down and said, oh, you should have seen this thing. It was huge.
Right.
And so that was in Ontario, Canada. And it was about 81 miles in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes down to about 130 kilometers. But, I mean, a lot of these were pretty good size when you're considering what, you know, a 10-foot one can do. And you're looking at these things.
It would just be unbelievable to see something like that coming.
You know, and a lot of these craters got filled in with water, so we didn't even know they were craters.
Correct.
You know, for the most part, until they get studying the things and they find these lakes, and then it's like, gee, this isn't really a lake. This was a crater. You know, and so yeah, and then there's a lot of other craters. From ancient, you know, going way back into the billions and millions and billions of years, that probably got pulled down into the Earth's mantle over all this time, you know, and different things could have happened to that crater, you know, over periods of time. I know in the West where we lived, we had a crater out there, and then we had another area called Craters of the Moon. And you could go out there and actually walk around through all this stuff. And the craters of the moon was supposed to be like walking on the moon's surface. It was basically lava. It was just a huge, big, black area of just lava where you could go out, and they had boardwalks on it where you could walk all through it. And that was pretty interesting. But, I mean, there's quite a few areas right here in the United States that you can go and see these kinds of things.
Right.
And then there's other ones, you know, seems like Russia gets a bunch of nasty stuff, doesn't it?
It does.
I mean, they really get pummeled every once in a while.
True.
You know, they've had some biggies, and it's like, well, we can't say much because the one that hit New Mexico was the one that supposedly wiped out the dinosaurs, they're saying. And so, well, we did our bit of damage to the Earth, too, so.
Oh, we sure did.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Australia has also had some biggies. So, three out of the top four are in the Southern Hemisphere. So that looks bodes well for us. The Ackerman Crater is estimated to be 580 million years ago. It's in South Australia. And it's located in what is now Lake Ackerman. The impact structure was estimated to be 56 miles across.
Yeah.
That would be just a huge... Just thinking about what that would even look like, looking at something coming in, you know, when you see
where Rhode Island was. I mean, that landed here, it was like we wouldn't even exist anymore.
Sure, exactly. The big ones would completely, I mean, would kill us, but it would completely take out, with no questions whatsoever, all of Rhode Island. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that just that size.
Yeah. And 364 million years ago was the Woodley Crater, Western Australia. And it said this crater is not exposed at the surface. It has led to many discrepancies regarding its actual size. Reports on its diameter vary from 25 to 75 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just
incredible. And you got that Manicouagan, I guess it is, M-A-N. Mm-hmm. I-C-O-U-A-G-A-N, that's a crater,
215 million years ago in Quebec, Canada. I was surprised that Quebec up in that area, they've had a few strikes up there, and I was, you know, I guess any place could have them, but I don't know why I just never thought about Canada getting hit like that. And now it's called Lake Manicouagan. And it's considered, even with the erosion that's now around it, one of the largest and best preserved craters on Earth, with a diameter of 62 miles or 100 kilometers. So, you know, once again, that they tend to go around that 100 to 50 mile radius for some odd reason. Most of these anyway do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so
and, that was a big, you know, 62 miles across for a crater. That's pretty big.
Oh yeah.
And then there was the Moro Kueng.
Yes.
Moro Kueng, I guess it is. M O R O K W E N G crater, 145 million years ago. And by the way, for those people who think that the Earth was created in about 3,000 years ago, you're a little off. And that was northwest South Africa, located near the Kalahari Desert in South Africa. The crater contained fossilized remains of meteorite that probably created it. They don't have in here the size of that. So, anyway, in this Kara crater, 70.3 million years ago, Nemesta in Russia, and they question there could be two craters there overlapping each other. So one they named Kara, and the other one is Ust-Kara. And they think that those are two separate craters. So, I mean, I don't know, but anyway,
that would be really unlikely. I mean, out of the whole Earth, these two
to have two hit the same place.
Yeah, what do you think? I guess because it did happen.
They do break up. Yeah, you know, as they're coming in, a lot of them do break up. It might have been a really big asteroid and it like snapped in two and just hit as it was snapping in two, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it created like a crater over another crater, which is kind of odd. I think that's about the only one that I read of that did that. So,
wild stuff.
Anyway.
You know what's interesting too is I noticed that all of these were down, you know, we've gone through seven of them now. And it started with the largest one, but it also has gone in chronological order, too. Meaning the biggest ones were the oldest ones. So that was, Kara was 70 million years ago. The next one, Trixublub, something like that crater, some Yucatan peninsula name. That's interesting, like I was saying, or we were saying about where these things form. The same countries just keep popping up: Australia, Canada, South Africa, and now we've got the Yucatan Peninsula, which we knew was big. But anyway, that was 65 million years ago, and look at it on the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. Many scientists believe that the meteorite that left this crater caused or contributed to the extinction of the dinosaurs. So only the eighth biggest one caused the extinction of the dinosaurs. Estimates of its actual diameter range from 106 to 186 miles, which the prover could would make it the biggest.
Yeah.
So, like I said, that's an estimated range of diameters, 106 to a whopping 186 miles in diameter. That'd be huge. And then... We go back to our friends in Russia. Papagai, I guess it's pronounced Papagai, P-O-P-I-G-A-I, crater. It's estimated to be 35.7 million years old. It is located in Serbia, rather Siberia, Russia. Russian scientists claim that this crater site contains trillions of carat diamonds, making it one of the largest diamond deposits in the world. These diamonds have been referred to as impact diamonds. And
so,
then,
you think diamonds, it takes what? A lot of pressure and a lot of heat to create a diamond. And so you can imagine what that thing was like when it was coming down like that.
Right.
And all the pressure it created. Well, I would like to go see that and maybe get a diamond. I think that would be neat.
Yeah. Don't you have a diamond? Do you have any diamonds at all? Even one?
No. I gave my one diamond that I had here to Jill. So I don't have anything. I don't have any fancy jewelry or nothing anymore. It's like, geez, I feel like a pauper.
Join the club.
I don't have anything. She's got all the rubies. She's got rubies. She's got she's got emeralds, and she's got diamonds.
Who is
that? I have like my daughter.
Oh wow, fabulous! Good for her.
She got all that stuff, and I got
paper mache.
Yeah, that's about it. Put one of them cigar bands around my finger, I guess.
Paste, I guess. Uh-huh. Oh, well. They are beautiful. Anyhow, and then the 10th biggest one was Chesapeake Bay, estimated to be 35 million years ago. That would be Virginia, USA. So, again, that's the most recent one, and it's just... It goes down by size as well as time. It's kind of weird.
Mm.
That was discovered in the early 1980s. The Chesapeake Bay crater is located approximately 125 miles from New York City, Washington, D.C. And as some estimates suggest, the crater is 53 miles wide. That's still huge. That's huge.
Well, yeah. You think of what 50 miles, just 50 miles is. You know?
Sure, that would still encompass all of Rhode Island.
Yeah, Clay, Rhode Island is only about 45, 50 miles across in any direction.
Right.
So a nice big round one right on top of us, there you go. I mean, geez. In 20 years,
yeah.
They have one they call YOLO, YOLO. And they believe on August 6, 2032, a 1,350-foot wide asteroid headed to the planet, and it could be headed to one near you.
Mm-hmm.
And a team of Ukrainian astronomers, I've got to flip my page. Let's see, have discovered a massive asteroid, 2013 TV-135, that's on track to hit the Earth August 26, 2032. The Russian news agency, RIA Novosti, reports the discovery was confirmed by five other astronomy groups in Italy, the UK, Spain, and Russia's Siberian Republic. And so, not sure if it will hit the Earth, but they're estimating that it possibly could. And the explosion would equate to 2,500 megatons of TNT, or 50 times greater than the biggest nuclear bomb ever detonated.
Wow.
Give that one to North Korea. I'll about that? It could land over there. They'll get all the nuclear whatever they want out of that thing.
Boy. Yeah, well, the way things are going, it's entirely possible. Just the thought of it is wild. But, you know, talking about this, it's not like a movie. If an asteroid actually did make impact that was anything of merit, you know, certainly is, let's say, 10 feet in diameter and up, you're talking something quite huge, but of course tiny compared to the size of the Earth. Yeah, it could absolutely change the entire climate again.
Sure.
I mean, I just noticed that people are, you know, climbing way up on things, and anyway.
Yeah, it would be a mess, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with one of these. Anyway, let me see right here. The meteor that hit Russia, injuring 1,100 people, February 15th, 2013. That was a very meteor. Was created by a small asteroid. It was a 10-ton meteor, 49 feet wide, and entered at the speed of 33,000 miles per hour, shattering itself into pieces of 18 to 32 miles above the ground. And a 10-meter-size object of it, like I said, is equal to a nuclear bomb. That left a 26-foot crater.
Mm-hmm.
And the meteor hit less than a day before asteroid 2012 DA-14 is to make the closest recorded pass of an asteroid on the Earth planet. And, you know, the thing of it is, when this thing hit in 2013, nobody was told and nobody evidently knew that there was a chemical disposal site nearby that held dozens of tons of weapon-grade plutonium. So basically, for the Russians that they were injured by this thing, it could have been maybe a whole lot worse than it actually was. Meteorites are small pieces of space debris, usually parts of comets or asteroids, and they become meteors when they enter the Earth's atmosphere. They burn up in that atmosphere, but if they survive the frictional heating and strike the surface of the Earth, they are called meteorites. In 2013, the strike is about 3,000 miles west. Oh, no, I don't want to do that when we did the 2013. It's the one in Tunguska. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing that in, oh, God, it was a, I mean, that happened long before us, but I remember seeing the story of that and the pictures of it and all these trees laid flat. That happened in 1908, and it was the site of the largest recorded explosion of an object plunging to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
That blast attributed to a comet or an asteroid fragment and is generally estimated to have been about 10 megatons. It leveled some 80 million trees. I mean, when you look at the pictures, it's just all like gray dust stuff, and these trees are just flat, as
wow.
far as you can see, just flat, and they all go in the same direction. You can see how it just came through there, and it just left them all in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really fascinating.
Oh,
but,
it is.
Let me see here. Yeah, well, I mean, between the thing, I just found it ironic that here we're going to talk about asteroids tonight. And then this morning on the early morning news, they said, oh, we're just about to have an asteroid pass us. And it's like, cool. That was perfect timing. mm-hmm. to have something, you know, come through that closely to us. And so I was kind of interested in staying awake so I could hear what they had to say about it. But yeah, that was on the news early this morning.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, those are the 10 of the largest hits.
Yep.
And I mean, you're probably going to find, if you wanted to go on there, you could find a number of other smaller hits.
I would imagine,
you know,
so.
Because when they break up, they do make, you know, they're still going to land on Earth, even if they break up, just chunks of it.
Mm.
Because look at how many houses have been hit with meteors. People's cars and houses. I mean, over the number of years, if you look that up, that's interesting in itself. It goes right to people's roofs. Or they go out and there's something, there's a big boom outside their house. They walk out and there's smoke coming out of a hole in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get down there and dig it up, it's a meteorite. And those things are valuable. Let me tell you. They go out into the deserts and search for these meteorites. And it's just amazing. They go out there actually with Geiger counters. Not Geiger counters. What am I thinking of? Oh, you know what I'm thinking of. You know when they
got
that?
Not a Geiger counter.
No, the thing on a wand where they go. We see people down here on the beach looking for stuff for those things. And
oh,
I can't
you mean
think
like
of,
a metal detector?
Yes. They use just a regular metal detector, and
oh,
they
wow.
go out into the desert, and they walk back and forth, and all of a sudden you can pick up meteorite. And those meteorites are worth a pretty penny. You can take them in, you can sell them, and a lot of people, they basically, you know, have made living off of it. If you live in an area where there have been you know, meteors coming down, but you have a meteor shower or anything like that, and you stand more of a chance of having a meteor come down. I mean, meteors come down a lot on the Earth, the little ones.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah,
some
sure.
of them. Yeah, some of them are, you know, like a good-sized rock. But I didn't realize, you know, how valuable they were.
Yeah,
so,
I know the meteorites were. Yep.
Mm.
One time my sister and her husband had taken a trip to Kentucky, and incredibly, they actually saw the so-called shooting star meteorite. And soon, on the road that they were on, they actually ran over it. It was, of course, indented in the surface. And they pulled over and saw it. It was glowing.
Uh-huh.
And it was the size of, like, a basketball. So pretty
good
size. That
was a good size.
It really was. And even though they knew it was valuable at that point, it was just ridiculously hot. And not being from Kentucky, they just decided to move on. I mean, you're going to throw it to this rock.
I could have bought a house with that thing.
They drove back the next day, and it was gone.
Oh,
so
yeah. Somebody got a house. I mean,
somebody got
so valuable.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Truly.
But I think that would be fun to go out and, you know, see if you could find something like that. I'm always nosy anyway, like to see if you could find something in there. So many cool things.
You think of the like Arizona or something, but I believe, isn't it Kansas or somewhere where they actually have the most? I don't know if it's because it's even flatter there, but yeah, they have these parks where you can go with your metal detectors and spend all day trying to find some, and people do, and you do make a lot of money. It's worth it.
Mhm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's no different than when you go to some of these states and you look for gems.
Could be my future.
You know, we used to have people come out and search for emeralds, I guess it was, in Idaho.
Hmm.
And you could get some big emeralds out there. And so people would do that. But, I mean, most of those people didn't sell them. They had jewelry and stuff made out of them.
Hmm.
But I think that to me, that's fun. It's like going on an Easter egg hunt, but the Easter eggs are more valuable. You know, if you get a nice big green stone. Or there's other areas, I think, down to the south that have rubies. So you can go down through there and find some nice quality rubies and stuff.
Mm.
And but, yeah, you do have to kind of dig around and, you know, I don't know. But when it gets down to the asteroid thing, you know, we always, I guess, we just kind of poo-poo these things and figure, oh, well, you know, nothing's ever going to hit us. Well, it isn't if they are going to hit us. It's when they're going to hit us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they are going to hit us.
Yeah, like I say, they're over a trillion just between
mm-hmm.
Mars and Jupiter. And they break away all the time.
Sure.
A trillion asteroids. So, oh yeah, it's going to hit.
So, you know, you have to just kind of look at it like, well, I don't want to look out and see some big glowing thing headed towards my house, but I would imagine I won't care anyway once it hits. So, but, you know, I was just kind of surprised that some areas seem to be hit more often than other places do. And I don't know why that is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Russia tends to get a lot of hits, and so does Australia. I was kind of surprised at Australia as far as why they get hit so often.
Well, I would imagine the oceans are hit more than anything.
Oh, probably, because you got probably, you know, you got more ocean than land.
Which could be a big problem, too. Anything of reasonable size that would hit would probably create some form of tsunami, I'm assuming.
Oh, sure it would. If you had one that was so many miles across and it was coming down at 33,000 miles per hour and it went into the ocean, I mean, there's going to be a big wave somewhere. Wherever that thing happens to, you know, push water, it's going to be a big wave. And so that's not surprising that could happen. And it certainly could happen, you know.
Sure. Oh, God, yeah.
So that was my fun thing, looking up asteroids and stuff like that. There's been and there was another place that they were talking about, too. Here we go with the Antarctic again.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see what they were talking about? They think that there was a large hit from an asteroid in the Antarctic, and underneath the ice, it could be one of the oldest ones ever because it didn't go, like, in other parts of the world, it would go, like, it would just be, you know, rolled over and rolled over so many times it would go into the mantle again.
Yeah.
Or would go into our mantle, where these in the ice would cool off faster and wouldn't go into the mantle. So they could be, this one area that they have come across could be the oldest and the largest site of all. It's gigantic.
Hmm.
So it's
oh, really?
Like, that's the spaceships. I don't know what else we're going to have up there, the Antarctic, but it seems like every time I turn around, there's something else new about the Antarctic lately. Now you got the Russians. Have you seen all the big fancy places they got over there? And they've been hauling in all kinds of equipment.
No.
And they're running around, they're riding on reindeer.
I thought you were going to say they're running around in their underwear. God.
They're not nuts. But they've got these big sleds and the reindeer are pulling those sleds, but they also have brought in a lot of equipment, and it's a big, big dome-like building that they've got. It's gigantic. And then there are others around beside it, and it's some sort of a base. They think that they're going in there. People have been told that they're going in there looking for oil. That's what they're headed for. But I saw the buildings today, and they're huge. So they're bringing in a lot of equipment, a lot of stuff in there. A lot. So,
well, we're,
it's interesting.
We are missing the action.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's pretty cold there at the Antarctic anyway, so.
God, they can keep it. I'm still waiting for the warm-up here. Though we had some warm weather finally, but we're back to the cold. But
yeah, you get two or three, you know, nice days, and then it goes back to the cold. But and it was kind of nice to be able to get out and not have to put a jacket on or anything. You know, go out and kind of enjoy yourself a little bit. The nice sunshine and the warm air. I mean, boy, after a long, you know, our winters haven't been bad here. It's just, it's always nice, I think, when spring shows up. And we actually have some daffodils out this year. And last year and the year before, we didn't have any. So it's kind of nice to see that. I love to see the flowers coming up. And
yeah, I sort of forget what happened. I think last year maybe we had some late, viciously cold weather. Because I remember last year we did not have... My magnolia didn't really bloom.
Yeah.
It's kind of tough here. But it's, so because we had this recent warm weather, it's almost in bloom. It's like 50%, you know, like those big pink flowers are ready to open. But I'm just hoping it doesn't get so cold that they don't get, they get blasted, because I love it when that opens up. That to me says spring. But
yeah, I don't think it's going to get that cold. There's a lot of Forsythia and stuff out right now. So
speaking of climate change, you know, one of the big things is, this ties in with our program, a lot of people try to figure out how these ice ages happen and then we thaw out. And a lot of times it happens extremely quickly. Supposedly, again, this gets into Dr. Robert Schock from Boston University. He's the guy that talks about crystal skulls. He talks about the pyramids being much older than what we think. The Sphinx even older than that. Okay. He thinks, this is in light of Göbekli Tepe, that really odd, what would you call it, prehistoric monument site in Turkey. That's at least 12,000 years old, okay? At least 12,000 years old. But see, that was right around that time where the Ice Age was ending. And he believes that the whole thing that sparked the Ice Age and the getting out of the Ice Age had to do with actually celestial events, like, for instance, being struck by an asteroid.
Oh.
Yeah. And there's a lot of evidence, because I think, is it what, iridium or something gets put down? And then you could just look at the stratas of rock, actually, and see where it is and how thick it is. It would tell, and then, you know, where on the planet it is. If it's evenly distributed around the world, something major hit the Earth. Mm-hmm. And this has happened repeatedly. The thing is, let's say, let's pretend, we won't go into the millions or anything, but let's just say modern man's only 200,000 years old. It is entirely possible that we have escaped any major asteroid impact in that time period. But as we know, the dinosaurs weren't so lucky. Of course, they were around millions and millions and millions of years longer than we have been. They claim we haven't even been around, you know, quarter of a million years, which I don't really believe, but whatever. Even if we go with that. So it's geologically a short period of time. It absolutely, unequivocally could happen any time. And what's freaky about it is, and this is why us astronomers, you know, try not to sound like they're wing nuts, like, okay, what do you do for a living? I look through telescopes trying to figure out if I can see any asteroids coming our way. Well, you know what? I suppose if it's big enough, it wouldn't matter if we knew it was coming or not. But, you know, let's face it, if we have time and it's only so big, let's say even a mile across, perhaps there's something we could do, like, you know, shoot at it or whatever, somehow deflect it. I don't know. But it is a real concern that Earth could be irreparably harmed by.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I mean, the Earth would come back, but I mean, You would
it
literally
wouldn't be
lose,
the first time.
No, you would literally lose millions of years. It would change things for millions of years.
Mm.
And, you know, then things will come back again. But it absolutely alters the course of life on Earth. That's why I say, you know, just when I think about the whole big picture of as old as the solar system is, as old as Earth is, yet we still have all these random asteroids flying around and we don't even know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild. And it's amazing when they'll find some fairly large ones. And by the way, they're orbiting. Just because it didn't hit us this time doesn't mean it won't hit us next time, meaning the same one. You know, they're constantly finding new asteroids. And these things, you know, some of them are big. They're miles across. If that, any of those things that make impact, game over. Nothing we're doing actually would matter at all. You know, hopefully it would hit the ocean. Hopefully the Pacific Ocean for us here on the East Coast. Doesn't matter. It would just change everything. Probably would take out all the electrical anyway.
Yeah. Well, just, our grids aren't so good anyway.
No. It's just the impact alone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just the wind from one of those impacts would knock our grids out.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so, you ever see the power of the wind just in the one atomic bomb going off?
Oh, good point.
Just the wind of that alone would absolutely blow everything. I mean, it blows buildings apart. It blows everything for miles and miles. It just levels everything. So you've got grids sitting up there that have been in need of a lot of care for a long time. And, you get hit with that kind of an explosion, and the winds alone are going to flatten everything we've got. So there you go right back to the 1800s. Because that's where you're going to be.
At least I know how
you're
to
not going
to
have a car that's going to work, because anything that's got a satellite in it or anything like that, I mean, nothing like that's going to really function. I mean, if something comes through and whacks one of the satellites as it's coming through, I mean, that could happen. I mean, just...
Mm-hmm. Well, in a similar thing, like if the Yellowstone Caldera goes out, I was going to say, well, at least I know how to grow vegetables, but this is the thing. Would you even have enough sunlight to do it?
That's right. You won't.
You wouldn't.
Because, and see, that's what creates ice ages, too. Because you don't have any sun, so you can't keep the earth warm. And so then you start forming ice ages because you don't have the sun to, the solar heat to do something with the earth. And so you wouldn't be able to plant anything if you had seeds left. You wouldn't be able to plant much because you've got to have sunlight. If the grids are down, you're sure not going to have any light to put over them.
Mm.
So just try to grow something. That ain't going to work. Mm-mm. Anyway, if it hits Rhode Island, we're so small. I mean, it won't take a big one.
I know.
So, well, I hope everybody has a good week. And we'll be on again next week, and I'm sure it'll be something halfway interesting anyway.
Yeah.
And if there's ever anything anybody else wants us to talk about, just let us know, and we'll look it up.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Okay, have a good one.
Thanks so much, Bye-bye. Judy. And you've been listening to The Unknown Zone, Asteroids, 10 Largest Earthly Hits and Their Dangers, with Judy Sullins and Dave Turco. For Judy, I'm David. See you next week for another hour of The Unusual.